Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Be the Right Club Today podcast. Super excited about our next guest, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Freddie Burns, Hal's longtime caddy on tour. Freddie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Freddie, I love having you back, buddy, even if it's only for an hour or so. We had so many great times, you know. I got 1,000 questions I could ask you, but tell us what you're doing now. That's more important right now.
Well, right now I am caddying for Ken Kanagawa out on the Champions Tour. And that's about it. Steady in the game.
Still in the game.
Still in the game.
You started in the game at 12 years old, and you are now
how old? 70.
70. So that's a long time in the game. Tell us what you've seen change in the game.
Well, what I see is a lot changed in the game. Actually, you know, the way the guys play golf now and the way they played then, you know, right now everybody is trying to hit the ball 1,000 yards because the game have changed where it allowed them to do that. For accuracy, that part of the game have diminished a little. You know, when we played Hal, we had to put the ball in the fairway. I mean, you know, if you didn't put it in the fairway, you're going to have a big score.
Yeah.
But now these guys are hitting the ball so long and they're building these golf courses where no rough, they just get up and bang it. You know, I personally like the old way because it shows more skill when clutch time comes. When you're going down the fairway, you know you're down the stretch and you know you have to hit this fairway instead of just getting up bumming it. I mean, that's my opinion. The world thinks different, I guess. It's one of those old things that I pride when you played that we needed to hit this fairway. And, you know, these days, they just get up and bump it, man. I mean, it's just – and it, I don't know how you teach these kids golf course management when all they got to do is get up and hit the ball hard. You know, it just – some kids that does it is to a disadvantage to them because if they had, I think, a little more touch, meaning a little more sight in these fairways and approaches to these greens, you ain't got to hit wedge to every green. Every green is not birdable. I mean, you know, we play the widest part of the fairway is where we want it to be. So, you know, that thing done changed. So, this is how we're doing it now.
Freddie,
it is.
Do you think that the Champions Tour is – do you think they've gone all in on the distance quest too? Or do you still think that they're – leaning a little bit more on the old school approach of fairways and greens?
Man, if you could hit the ball long, you're doing good. They going in the same way. They making these golf clubs and balls and shafts. They making them to go long. The ball is straighter. It's hard to curve the ball now. So, I mean, they just booming it. See, the old guys hit it long, too.
The old guys do?
Oh, yeah, they love to hit it long, man. We played with Rikis Goosen last week. Pal and this guy hit some tries. It was just unreal. I mean, he hit it so far past Ken and whoever else we was playing. It was just, he was playing a different game.
You can't remember who you played with last week?
Yes, I can. Caught you.
Hey.
So you got to be careful who you say the guy hit the ball 50 yards back. You know, you got to be careful.
You don't want to expose those short hitters?
No, I can say Ken because I work for him and he understands it. And Ken ain't short, but he's short to a guy like Retiece. Oh, boy.
So Freddie, you've caddied for a great like Hal. You've been on the bag with, you know, Hal going against Jack and going against Tiger. You've caddied and seen a bunch of the best players in the world. What are the traits? What are some of the traits that you see with those guys that are just better than everybody else?
You know, it's always before Hal and I went to the tour. I like your Raymond Floyd because what I seen in Raymond was in his eyes, he had a determined to beat people. I thought, that was my thought now. And when we got on tour, I watched the way he played golf, you know, and it was like, it was no nonsense. I mean, when you come to the golf course, you come to work. No nonsense. And Raymond was a golf course manager. He managed his golf ball. And I love that about Raymond Floyd. That's what I took out of getting on the tour. But when Tiger came, the golf thing changed. Tiger, as I say, came out of hitting the ball as long as he was hitting it. But with Tiger, he was hitting them greens and he was hitting it close and he was putting the ball. All of his putts hit the back of the hole. None of them trickled in. They all hit the back of the hole, which he was young, and that happens when you're young. They all don't hit the back of the hole now. He done got a little older and realized, hey, some of these putts need to be finessed in.
So, Freddie, not to jump in here and stop you, but you mentioned something to begin with, the look in the eye. So don't you think that all of the real champions had a look about them that was focused and you mentioned no nonsense. I mean, they were on point with what they were trying to do. They had a clear definition of what they were trying to do, and they wouldn't deviate from that. Would you agree with that?
Oh, 100%. I mean, and all those guys that looked it that way and took care of their business that way, they were champions. And if you didn't learn anything from watching these guys, then you got left behind. You, for instance, you was non-nonsense. You knew what you had to do. You had to take care of your business. That means you had to stay focused. You had to stay in the lane. You couldn't be out there kidding with the boys and doing this and doing that. You have to be focused. You have to have a game plan. And your game plan needed to be, I am going to be the best guy that I could be this day. And if it takes, you know, not talking to this guy or not doing this, so be it. These guys, it's respected. Hey, Hal, let me step inside a minute. This guy's cutting grass.
So let's talk about our past, Freddie. I think a lot of people would be interested in that. What do you recall about our past? We had a lot of past.
Hey, man, let me tell you something. That's the greatest part of my life. Needless to say, man, we did it all, Hal. We did it all together. We understood what it takes, player and caddy. to be champions and to be where you was respected here, and I had to be where I had to be respected because I worked for Hal Sutton. And, you know, your dad, I got to say this, Hal, your dad was the main reason I got to do all those things. And, you know, he always told me, Freddie, he said, you and Hal is going to have to get out there and get busy. You're going to have to stay and focus on what you're trying to do. And you know, he nailed that to you 1,000 times. Hal, you got to work hard. And you know, it just, I always go back to him. But you know how doing all of this, we had fun too. We had fun.
We enjoyed each other.
We loved each other. We enjoyed each other. And we knew, I knew what you expected of me. I knew that. And when I got sideways sometime, being honest, you always check me. You call me to the side. You say, Freddie, say, let's talk. See, and you know, sometimes I thought that was kind of rough, but, you know, in the end, I knew what you was trying to do. You were trying to make us better. And I know that, and I live with that all my life. It's getting better. It's no settling. You could
no settling.
Get better.
No settling. You know the reason why we couldn't settle, Freddie? Because we didn't have but one shot at this, and we didn't know how long it was going to last. And, you know, we were lucky in that it lasted a long time. But there's many others that it doesn't last a long time. And I think one of the reasons why it lasts a long time is because of what you said initially, no nonsense. We were focused. My dad used the word focus all the time. He wanted us focused on golf. And, you know, I look back at my life. I'll be 64 years old tomorrow, the day this airs. And I look back and my dad tried to sidetrack me from anything that would keep me focused on something else. And you saw that firsthand, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Even as a grown man, me making my own living and everything else, he did whatever it took to get my mind back on golf. I mean, to the point of being completely honest, to the point that I'd have rather almost had open heart surgery without any painkillers. He hurt me so bad.
Yeah.
And, but to get to the point, that's what he would do. And, you know, I used to tell him all the time, I said, you knew exactly how far you could bend me without breaking me. Would you agree with that?
Oh, 100%. And you know, it had got worse. Sometime, Hal, you may not say it or whatever, but I thought that, you know, you needed your dad because once you knew your dad was looking, he was seeing what was going on, and he would straighten you up. He would. He had his own way of doing things, but it all boiled down to he wanted the best thing for Hal Sutton, and he didn't want you to get sideways with a lot of stuff because, you know, this game can humble you.
Oh, it sure can.
I don't care how good you are, this game will bring you down to your size. And Mr. Sutton knew this. But Mr. Sutton also knew where we could go. And that was to the top. Mr. Sutton knew this. And he kept pushing us, pushing us, pushing us till we got to the top.
So I don't mean to shorten that anything, but let's travel back to 1983. Anheuser-Busch, Kings Mill, 6-shot lead, and we lose it on the last round. Do you remember that?
Yes, we lost it on the last 9.
Yeah.
Calvin P. shoots 30, we shoot 37 and lose the golf time.
Yeah.
And you know what?
You mentioned humbled. We were humbled right there.
That was our humble pie right there, buddy. That was our humble pie. But you know what? You know what that house son did? We went to that PGA up there in Riviera, and we led wire to wire.
So let's talk about the week in between. Do you remember the week in between? There was 1 week in between Anheuser-Busch and the PGA. Okay. Do you remember what we did?
No, I can't remember right now.
Shreveport Country Club.
Oh yes, Shreveport Country Club. Day sun up to sundown.
Sun up to sundown.
Up to sundown.
And hey, when we got finished that week, what did I tell you before we went out to Riviera? What did I tell you?
Told me we're going to go get them.
Did you feel like we were going to go get them?
I felt like we was, when you told me that, we was prepared to go get them. And we had ate enough humble pie. Believe me. And when we went out there, house son, I have never told you this. I'm on the outside looking at you. I knew you was going to beat them because you had that look, that Jack Nicklaus look at the time. You had that look that, hey, you guys beat me the last time we played. You are not going to beat me this week. And let me tell you, you took care of your business that week.
So let's go to the back nine that week. I think this will be helpful to a lot of people. The 12th, 13th, and 14th holes. We had a four-shot lead going into number 12. You remember?
Yes, I do.
What happened?
I think we made bogeys.
Three of them in a row.
Three in a row. We bogeyed three in a row. And Jack Nicklaus was—he was moving the woods back there.
Yeah, he was birdieing everything.
He was birdieing all the holes.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, on the par five, when you made that putt for par, and we went to that 18-tee, Hal, it was something about, I knew you was going to get the job done. I knew you was going to, because we worked all week long for that shot, for that time, for that opportunity. And you had Jack up there looking on the big screen, looking at you. He was waiting on us to make a mistake. You put your ball down there 185 yards from the hole, then took that five and hit it right in there. And I looked up at the big screen TV that was left of the green, and I saw Jack walk off. I knew it was something going on.
So let's recall another 18th tee. TPC 2000, we're walking from the 17th green to the 18th tee. Was there any similarities in me from the caddy's perspective, from your perspective? Was there any similarities in the guy in 1983 and the guy in 2000 going to the 18th tee?
Well, Hal, let me put it like this. You more mature, you have been there and you had done that. And the only reason I started talking to you is because I wanted us to hit the ball into the green last. I wanted to see what Tiger was going to do. And I knew he was going to hit that burning three iron past our three wood. And that is why I started talking to you, you know, just keeping. It was a long walk from that 17 green to that 18 tee. You needed to be loose. I need to talk to you or whatever we do. And let me tell you, you got up on that tee, and you hit that ball, you started out in water and moved back to the fairway. And when you snatched that tee out of the ground, I said, ain't no beating this guy today. Ain't no beating.
So was there a determined look on in my eye to get the job done?
It was a most determined look on you. More in 83 than in more than 2000 than in 83. Simple reason, I thought everybody had a chance to beat Tiger, didn't beat him, didn't do it. And you told me, Hal, at Riviera, I don't know if you remember this, you say one day we're going to get on our kind of golf course and we're going to bring this guy down. And, you know, I thought about that when we was walking from the 18th tee to our drive. I said, you know, Hal told me this. He told me we was going to get this guy on our kind of golf course and we was going to beat him. I said, but the job ain't done. It wasn't done, but it did come to my mind. That's how confident I was of you.
Freddie, you know, we've heard a lot of the from the PGA Championship story to the tour player to tour championship, the Players Championship and the PGA Championship. What's some of your other favorite Hal Sutton stories?
Oh boy. Oh well. Oh boy. We on TV. can't think of none right now.
we'll come back to that. I'll ask a different one. What's the hardest part of being a caddy?
The hardest part of being a caddy. I tell you what, being a caddy, you have to be, first of all, you got to be responsible. That means never be late on your job. Never, ever be late. Sometimes you get in situations like getting a traffic jam or something, but caddies never supposed to be late on their job. Second of all, you got to understand your player and what he want from a caddy. Sometimes, let's say me, for instance, I was a club puller. Sometimes I was a cheerleader, and you can't be, you know, you can't think, I can't, you know, look, I look bad cheerleading. No, I don't. This is what my player need at the time. This is what I'm going to do. A lot of guys don't want to do that, but that's their business. You know, I did it because I knew that if I give Hal some confidence, tell him how good he is, it gets him thinking positive thoughts. And that's the only way I knew how to get is to do that for him. Other guys, different things.
So you said it a mouthful right there. You got to read the player, whatever they need. And sometimes that's a correct yardage. Sometimes that's a supportive in club selection. Sometimes that's reading the break on a green that he's indecisive about, or sometimes that's just making him feel confident in what he's about to do. But you're constantly reading the player and what he needs, right, Freddie?
That's correct. If you can't read your player, then your player's at a disadvantage. He loses something from his caddy because the caddy only can do so much for a player. And when a caddy can't read his player, he don't know when to step in or not. He don't know what to say to make a player refocus whatever he's trying to get his player to do. And a caddy that won't step up to the plate, a yes caddy is a dead caddy. A caddy that say yes to everything is a dead caddy to me. I mean, you got to be able to be, you know, you got to feel like, well, I got to say this because even if I'm wrong, I got to show my player I'm trying to do. Everything ain't going to be right. But I can't hold back. If I see him, if he's drowning, I got to try to throw him something that he can grab to pull him in with. I mean, I just can't let him drown out there.
There's only two people out there.
It sure is. And the guy.
Well, you remember I used to tell you early on, if I can't swim and I'm out there drowning, throw me a life preserver and pull me in. And yeah. That doesn't necessarily mean save me or anything else. What that really means is throw something my way, words or wisdom or something that secures us enough that we can move on and put the past behind us. And, you know, to me, people don't really realize this, but I mean, it's a constant battle from shot to shot out there in professional golf. It's not just battle from day to day. It's battle from shot to shot.
Oh, I agree 100%. And let me tell you, and if you lose focus, that one time you lose focus may cost you the tournament. It may cost you the tournament. And if your caddy is not into the game, sitting there watching what's going on, and if he see you lose focus, and you may lose focus, he need to say something. You may not do what he say, whatever, but he at least he can put it there for you to make the decision. And losing focus, that's what I see happens to these guys all the time. And when you lose focus, you make bad golf swings. You're not committed. And when you're not committed, then that's when bad golf swings occur and bad stuff happens.
Freddie, you caddied for Hal for a long time, one of the best ball strikers to ever play. You've also caddied for, say, Tom Pernice for a while, who has one of the best short games that we've probably ever seen. Did you guys' strategy differ based off the skill level of the player? Did your strategy as a caddy differ with the different, you know, skill levels that they both brought?
Yes, absolutely. See, Hal Manley was fucking, you know, he go at them flags. His iron game was so great that, you know, all left flags, we went at. Right flags, we went at the middle of the green most of the time. And if it worked over there, it worked over there. Tom Pernice is different. His short game is so good that he goes for everything. I mean whatever flag is there, sometimes I had to tell him, I said, Tom, we can't short size ourselves on this hole. I mean, this hole is dead over there. Even he has a good short game, but you have to be a wizard to get some of these balls up and down. So I preach to him. And it's good if you have a guy that you can talk to. See, Tom Pernice, I tell him, I said, Tom, we can miss, I know, but we cannot miss this ball over on this side of the green. Now, we may miss it over there because his ball striking ain't the greatest. But I done my job when I told him we can't miss it over there. Now, he got to get himself out of jail, hit one of those great short game shots to make par. See what happened?
You didn't have to remind me not to short side myself. That was a built-in mechanism, wasn't it? Hey, I didn't want that short-sighted job.
Hey, man, I tell you. But we didn't have it much. Yeah, think about it.
Yeah.
Them short-sighted shots, you didn't play over there. I mean, if you had good sense, you wouldn't play over there. If the ball get over there, a 10-foot putt from a short on the big side of the green was good. Now, those ones that wasn't short-sighted, yeah, we knocked the flag out the hole on them. And you know it.
hey, we didn't hold many shots out there, did we, Freddie?
Oh, man, we hold them all the time. What are you talking about? Man, we had pins jumping out the way. You know that.
So, Freddie, the famous Be the Right Club Today shot has been, you know, been a popular saying, one of the most popular, one of the most famous shots ever. But Hal talks about a shot that he hit earlier. It was actually, I think, the day before, but it was during that round that was probably better than that. Do you remember what shot he's alluding to?
It could have been alluding to one of those. Oh, no, that was a 5 in you. It was a bunker shot. Oh, yes, sir. He hit a bunker shot on the par three.
Well, talk about that one a little bit.
Hey, look here. He had one leg out of the bunker. He had a downhill lie. And I was scratching my head. He had to go all the way across that bunker. And he hit the most, he hit the best shot we hit all year. Right there. And Tiger, he was thinking he had us because where the ball was. But Hal showed some game, man.
That was one of those few short-sighted times that we pulled some wizardry off.
We sure did, man. That was so good. Being the right club today would just have to be the right club. I mean, it wasn't nothing in the way. It was just the situation at the time. But, you know, Hal was a little pumped up because normally that was 5-iron yardage. And that is why Hal said be the right club, because he had, once it left the club here, it was right at that flag. And once it hit up on that green, that was it. You had the right club, as you could see.
One of the best, as Brandel Chambly says, one of the best high five and low five combo in the history of golf.
Hey, man, it was time. It was time, I tell you. Hal had to go through all this stuff. Man, we had a 4-5, 6-shot lead, and everybody was asking Hal, do you think you could beat it? I mean, hey. And then he was talking about other people beating him instead of us, and we got the lead. And, you know, it kind of, if you know Hal, he don't go for too much stuff. I mean, he don't push his buttons too much. Hal was kind of pissed off, and I was glad he was. And then I got really pissed off when we went out on the on Monday and went to the putting green, and Tiger's caddy had a wrench in his pocket. And I said, wait a minute. I said, hey, man, you know you got a wrench in your pocket? He said, yeah. I said, what's that for? He said, well, to take the pin down on the 18th hole. So I told Hal, I said, Hal, these folks think they're going to beat us. I said, this guy got a wrench in his pocket. Tiger's caddy. You know, everybody else that they played, they come from behind, they beat. You know, it was just bad.
Freddie, did Tiger say something to you after the round, after the scoring tent?
Yes, he did. He walked out of the scoring tent, and I was sitting over, you know, I was still coming down. And he walks over, and he shook my hand. He said, great job. He said, you guys was the best this week, is what he told me. I told him thank you.
So, Freddie, maybe not everybody knows this. The first time you watched me play golf, how old was I? Do you remember?
You were 17.
17 years old. And I was either a junior or senior in high school.
You were a senior?
Senior. And you made the statement then you wanted to caddy for me. And, you know, we sparked a friendship right there that lasted for, I'll be 64 tomorrow, so however many years that is. And, you know, I miss you, man. I mean, I really do.
Hey, man, the feeling is neutral. You know that, man. It was like, our relationship was like two brothers. It really, really was to me, and I knew it was to you. And caddy player, they get close, but never like what we were. Man. I just don't believe so. I mean, we enjoyed ourselves off the golf course too.
We went to dinner a lot, talked about life.
Yeah,
and when it wasn't just golf with us.
No, it was not. And I was Uncle Freddie to your kids.
Yep. You were. Still are.
I know it.
I think Right. You know, we had Tom Watson on here not long ago, and he talked about his relationship with
Bruce.
Drawing a blank. With who?
Bruce.
Yeah, Bruce Williams. And they had a great relationship too. And it becomes family. I mean, when you've been with the player so long, I mean, we had holidays together, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And
it's not just golf course stuff. You become family.
That's for sure. And your whole family, let me tell you something. It wasn't no black and white thing. I want to say this, Ab, with your family. And they proved that to me. I mean, they took my, they gave me everything. They gave my family. Hell, it's just unreal what Mr. and Mrs. Sutton did for me and my family. They accept me in day one. You know it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I haven't seen you. I've got to tell this. Pam, my youngest sister, Pam, her youngest son, Blake, was named starting quarterback for Baylor this next year. And does that surprise you with the grandfather that he had, my dad?
Yeah, no, not at all. Hey, I watched Blake play in a bowl game or something, I think.
Yeah. He was Big 12 MVP that year, last year. So, you know, I guess the reason why I bring that up is because my dad, whether it was son, daughter, grandchild, whatever it is, preached focus, work hard, a work ethic that stood out among others. He said, don't let anybody work harder than you. And I think, you know, you and I would go home and we worked hard when we were at home. Don't you think, Freddie?
Oh, ain't no doubt. Every day we worked, Sal.
Yeah.
We're still taking off. We the job ain't done. We got to
We didn't even take vacations, did we?
No, we did not. Hey, and we practiced when it was freezing. The only thing stopped us from going on the greens was froze.
So I think that's great that we bring that up because, you know, some of the youth in America today think that it's just going to slip through the pillow at night when they sleep. Did we feel that way? We had to work for it, didn't we?
Hey, they better have a rude awakening if that's what they think. Hey, you got to work for this stuff, man. And then you got to keep on working to keep it because you can get it and you can lose it and can't find it. We struggled how too. We had the deals that we struggled. We lost it and couldn't find it for nothing in the world. But when we did find it again, we knew that we needed to keep it because we know how bad it was on the other side. Not that we weren't working to get it back. We worked every day then too. But it was just something golf just takes away from you. It humbles you. And then when you get it, you better keep on practicing and keep on getting better.
Well, I think it goes right back to that word focus. I got less focused whenever I felt like I was failing everybody else in the world. You know, we played for us, and then all of a sudden, when the world felt like I was failing it, not winning enough golf tournaments, I started doing other things, buying horses and everything else, trying to become a cowboy. That wasn't your favorite time in my lifetime, was it, Freddie?
No, it was.
But it goes right back to the look in the eye and the focus. It goes right back to that. The reason why Tiger's been the best player of all time and Jack Nicklaus is because they never lost focus of what they were trying to do. They never switched gears. They never wanted something else more. They always wanted that to the max. And that is the reason why they're the two best players that's ever played the game.
And I agree 100%. That's exactly what I meant when I said that. And you could see it in them. I mean, they don't get side. You don't sideline them. No.
So there were some of us that would get that look in their eye for a while.
Right. Absolutely.
But then other things took over. Those two guys, nothing ever took over.
Nothing. Nothing ever took over. You're right. I agree. That's my point. They stayed focused. They stayed focused on what they were trying to accomplish. And 1 week didn't make no difference. Yeah, they're trying to stay. They stayed focused. Every time they hit the golf course, they want to be focused because they know it's easier to get through, get your job done when you focus. And it's so to get sidetracked when you're not focused. Sometimes talent gets you through, but most of the time, if you ain't focused, you don't do good.
Freddie, what do you think separates the guys like Bernhard and McCarron and the guys that have had a lot of success on the Champions Tour from the guys that are you know, finishing top 25 or top 40 every week?
Let me tell you something about this. Well, McCarron, he's injured right now, but when he wasn't injured, you know how good of a player he was. Bernhard Langer, he might be somewhere practicing now, right now. I mean, he's the first guy you see on Mondays, and he's the last guy you see on Sundays because he's in the last group every week. This guy is 63 or 4 years old, and they can't beat this guy. Because he won't let them outwork him. This guy works. And he's focused. He is the main definition of focus.
I would agree.
He's a good one. I'm telling you. He wants to beat you every week. He wants to beat you every week. Now he got this goal. He's trying to get these other two tournaments to catch a Hill Irvin. And believe me, I believe he's gonna do it.
So, I got a follow up question, kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum. You've caddied in a ton of pro-ams. I always ask this with all the pros that we have on, but you're the first caddy we've had on, and you've caddied in a bunch of pro-ams. What's the mistake you see the average amateur make that you would like to rectify from golf and never see again?
Reverse pivot.
Mechanical issue. I like it.
Yeah, reverse pivot. I mean, everybody want to hit two left or three club, and everybody want a bag out of the golf shop. Reverse pivot.
It's a great answer. I love it.
Well, Freddie, I don't even know what to say, man. I think about, there's not a single day that goes by that I don't think about you. And we've been there for each other for a long time, and I don't ever want that to change. So,
it won't.
I love you, man.
That would never change, Al, until one of us leave and go to heaven. That would never change.
Well, y'all have a great week. Make a lot of birdies. We'll be pulling for you.
Okay, boss, man. Thank you very much for having me on.
Ready? Thank you, sir. It was awesome.
All right, thank you.
See y'all next time.
All right.
See you, Freddie.
Be the right club today. Yes!